Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined, as always, by my good friend and partner in radio, Barnabas Piper. And Pipe, you are out on the West Coast. You are in the land of Ron Martin and the land of sabbaticals and dinners out with sports playing in the in the room. What's the weather like out there?
What are you looking at? It's well, mornings out here are like my favorite weather. It's like 40 and sunny, which is about perfect.
Good.
And then this time of year, it gets up to like 70, 75, no humidity.
Wow.
So I can understand why people pay the premium to live in this part of the world.
Sure.
There's a lot of them that do. And that's why I wouldn't want to move out here, because there's too many people. But it's a beautiful place.
Yes. No, I feel you, man. We're actually looking at a nice day here in West Tennessee, Pipe. So,
That's rare for this time of year. I mean, we're getting into spring there, but not quite there.
I feel like we're moving out of monsoon season, maybe. So, I have hope that we are
at
least. But Piper, we have better things to talk about than the weather.
We do.
We have business, and then we have our usual allotment of stimulating conversational topics. So, business wise, let's talk about Together for the Rant. This is right around the corner now. It's officially just over a month away. So,
well, just
Piper,
over
tell
a month
them
from
how
the
they
time of this recording. I think when this episode drops, it will be less than a month. So that
it
means
it will be less than 1 month away.
That means
which
people
is
need
huge.
To need to get their butts in gear and go buy their tickets.
That's it, man. And where do they do that? HappyRampPodcast.com?
Yep, HappyRampPodcast.com is the easiest place to go. I would ask a favor of our listeners. If you're planning to go, please tell your friends who, you know, especially if they're planning to be at Together for the Gospel, just go, hey, why don't you get tickets to this thing too? Because you are our best marketing tool. We've talked about this thing ad nauseum. And I think that means until nausea. I'm not sure about the Latin, but that's kind of the way I'm beginning to feel about promoting this thing.
Dude, I'll ask my kids. My kids go to classical school, which means they're learning Latin. So maybe we'll bring them on the program. We can get a little Latin lesson.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, just to learn. So, we've promoted this thing until I'm sick of it. So now I would ask your help. If you're planning to go, would you tweet about it, Facebook about it, invite your friends, send the link? If you're not planning to go and wish you could go, would you please do the same thing? Just to throw out a little free support by hitting send on a tweet or a Facebook post or an Instagram or a, you know, whatever other social media account you like to use.
Pipe, I realize we're taping this episode like really closely on the heels of the last one dropping, but has there been any activity in the Ligaris Coffee is for Closers meme space?
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that pop up at all. There has been a little bit of traction on the discount code we gave for the Together for the Rant, but Ligaris Coffee is for Closers I haven't seen yet. So I would encourage listeners to jump on that. But my guess is by the time they hear me, we will have had a couple listeners who deliver because they come through in the clutch for us so regularly.
I feel like they do, man. I feel like they can be counted on. And that's the one thing that I do love about our listeners. So hopefully they can be counted on to buy tickets for Live in Louisville 2 Together for the Rants, and maybe even bring me some swag this time. You know, I don't want to get my hopes up.
Well, after our conversation about support animals, we did have one guy who tweeted and said he would bring a support cigar for you. And
I'll take it.
Like that is a deep expression of affection for Ted Kluck, is to bring a cigar to Together for the Rant.
Dude, he's ministering to me in a very tangible way, and I will take it. But Pipe, speaking of serious things of a serious nature, I'm gonna lay a little something on you and a little something on the audience. I feel guilty about something that I said in the last episode about soup night. Soup night is a thing that I'm involved in, not only because I am a sad, hollowed out shell of my former dangerous self, but because I actually do enjoy it and I enjoy the people at soup night. And I just want to apologize publicly for what I said about that situation. And I'm reminded that, man, on the air and off the air, I can like really get in trouble with my words and really occasionally be a huge jerk. And I hate that aspect of myself. I really do. And it's a reminder, again, not to get all Shepherd's Conference on the thing, but it's a reminder of how deeply I need the gospel. Like, I need Christ's forgiveness in every aspect of my life, including this one. So I am thankful for that. I am thankful for forgiving people in my life who put up with me and continue to put up with me. And that's all I'll say about it, Piper. But yeah, but
well, on the heels of that, we periodically get feedback about being too cynical. Mm-hmm. I don't worry about the people who are offended that we're sarcastic, because that doesn't bother me. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But cynicism is a thing that I don't want to cannonball into cynicism. Yeah, and so I take those criticisms seriously personally, because I know that I easily devolve into being a cynic. Sure. And for us as a podcast, because we – you know, it's called the happy rant. It's not called the grumpy, angry rant that hates everything or that thinks everything is dumb. Even though, you know, we do poke fun at things, we want to maintain a tone of doing it mostly from a place of, like, we're part of this crowd that we're making fun of, or we're having – it's all in good fun. And that means towing the line a lot. So we tow this line of, like, we're making fun of, but once it moves from laughing with to laughing at, or you know, we're not kind of all in this together. We've overstepped, and we do that sometimes and make mistakes for the sake of trying to make a joke. And, it's a hard line to balance. And when we make a mistake, it's good for us to be able to admit it and apologize. So sorry to those who have told us about the cynicism that we sound like we're getting into. That might also be an effect of not having positive Ronnie on the show, because he's the upbeat one. But,
is he the upbeat one? That's funny, man.
He's the least he's the least aggressive in his criticism.
Yeah, he's the most politic, that's for sure.
Yeah, okay. You know? Maybe that's what I mean. Yes. He sounds very California easygoing, whereas you and I will kind of go in on things. So he's a good counterbalance to our snark.
And, that's true.
So anyway, not to belabor all of this and drag it on forever and ever, but we do not want to be cynical and critical to the point of hurtful. We do want to, use snark, sarcasm, those things for jokes. So when we overstep, we do want to be able to admit our failures in that.
Most definitely, man. Most definitely. And we are grateful for every listener and again, the people in our real lives who put up with us. But
especially those people.
Especially those people. All of that being said, Piper, we are about to get sarcastic about a people group. And this is a people group that is near and dear to both of us. It's a people group that we, were probably a part of at one point in our lives.
I was definitely a part of this.
I don't think I was to the extent that you were. I definitely wasn't reformed at the time, but I'm a part of it now in the sense that I teach at a Christian college and I go to a reformed church in the metro area of that Christian college. So the people group that we're going to talk about is I want to talk about what life looks like for a white reformed college dude, because I feel like you could drop us in any part of the United States in which there are white reformed college dudes and life would look startlingly similar. So let's suss out, Piper, what are some of the aspects of life? Like what does your life look like if you're a white reformed college dude?
Well, I mean, and so the way that I'm coming at this is these are guys at Christian colleges. So,
sure.
You know, I think there's a slightly different brand for this bunch who are, you know, part of, you know, RUF or CRU or whatever at a big state university. So I'm thinking, I'm thinking Union, Wheaton College, you know, the schools that you and I have deep investments in current or past. So, honestly, the first thing that came to mind when we began to lay this out was Ultimate Frisbee.
Yes. Talk about why Ultimate Frisbee is so important in the lives of these young white reformed college dudes. Because you're right. Anywhere you go, again, whether you're in like, you know, Hammond, Louisiana or Los Angeles or, you know, Wheaton, Illinois, there's a lot of Frisbees being thrown by these guys. Why is that?
I honestly struggled. I played Ultimate Frisbee. You know, I was on Wheaton had a pretty involved intramural
club
Ultimate
team.
Frisbee League. They also had a club team which started while I was there. And, you know, they asked me to join. And by that time in my college career, I was like,
I see you, Piper.
Yeah, I know. I got recruited to be on an upstart club Ultimate Frisbee team. It's one of my greatest athletic non-accomplishments. By that time, my college career, I was maybe a junior or senior, and wasn't that interested. But if they had asked me a year or two earlier, I would have thought it was like a status symbol to go out and play on like the practice soccer field with these guys in bandanas.
Here's the thing. It actually is a status symbol at Union. Like, our club Frisbee team probably draws more fans than our intercollegiate sports do. And that's not a joke. It's a huge deal to be on the Union like Frisbee team.
See, and I think, okay, so I have a couple theories on why it's so popular. One is if you play varsity sports, it's very hard to be like a rabid reformed guy because you have your commitments to other things. Because
you don't have time. Yeah.
I mean, you don't have time for 2 a.m. arguments about limited atonement. You don't have time to be judging what people are reading or not reading and debating whether or not C.S. Lewis was a heretic. You don't have time for
those
things.
A favorite reformed guy thing. Being down on C.S. Lewis is a you could set your watch by that reformed guy phase.
I was going to say it is a phase because you loved the Chronicles of Narnia. Then you find out that he was like rigorously anti-Calvinist and an Anglican. So clearly he was heretical, if not just apostate. And, you know, you go through that phase.
Yeah, you get all conflicted about it. Like, well, I've got some concerns, quite frankly, about C.S. Lewis.
So you
start laying that on people.
Right. Yeah. And then you pick out the four phrases in whatever it is, surprised by joy, then you're like, see, pagan. You don't have time for that stuff if you're a varsity athlete. But if you're like an intramural athlete or a club athlete, first of all, you don't have to be that good at sports, which is a great starting point for a lot of white boys.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, you have time for these other very essential parts of white reformdom. I think the other aspect of Ultimate Frisbee that is so appealing is that it's co-ed. Oftentimes.
Yes. That's it, man.
If you don't know how to talk to girls.
Yeah. And you don't know how to think about dating.
If you're not certain that dating is not going to send you straight to hell, then the only way to talk to girls is like a college ministry or playing Frisbee with them. And so,
but it's like the only way to have like physical contact with a girl that's not considered inappropriate.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you're like going after the same Frisbee together and it's like the highlight of your week.
Yeah. You're sprinting shoulder to shoulder, you know, and that's just super exciting. And so, you want to get on the intramural team with the cutest girls.
Or if you're competitive with the
ones who are really good.
I find that reform guys tend to go for a certain kind of girl. And this is going to venture into really probably dicey territory. So stop me, Pipe, if you need to. But
if I'm supposed to be your conscience, you're in bad shape.
Dude, we need Ron back.
I know.
We need Ron to be the conscience for both of us. But what I was about to say, though, like reformed guys, so they want a girl who's really thinky and really smart. They also tend to want a girl who doesn't wear hardly any makeup, but is still beautiful. You know what I mean?
Right.
So kind of the natural like hikey, bikey, frisbee playing girl who can like, you know, quote Grudem's systematic theology while also like, you know, snatching a frisbee out of the air. You know what I mean?
And ideally is verbally outspoken about wanting maybe a career for a time, but then to be a stay at home mom because.
Oh, absolutely. Like, verbally outspoken about ideally how complimentarian she already is.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
But not somebody who kissed dating goodbye because then you don't have a shot. Ultimately what I think we're saying is that the white reformed college dude wants a girl who is a unicorn.
He wants a unicorn. And Piper, I see this all the time. Do you not see this? Like, these guys are just like, well, you know, she doesn't look like a Victoria's Secret model and she's not a 5-point Calvinist. So I don't think I don't even want to have coffee with her. You know what I mean? I don't even want to chase a frisbee with her. So yeah, these guys are holding out for something that like basically doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's and if it did exist, they probably don't have the cojones to say, hey, do you want to, you know, grab coffee on Thursday or dinner on Friday or whatever? Like, just to straight up ask her out. Like, that's I think we've talked about this on a previous episode. Maybe it was the one that we did with your students a year or so ago. But yeah, just didn't have the guts to just ask her out. So that's a key element of white reformed college dude life is
right.
a complete complete paralysis around all things dealing with women, except for Frisbee.
Absolutely. Except for Frisbee. So yeah, where I was going with that was Frisbee essentially becomes your dating life. You know what I mean? So here's your dating life if you're a white reformed guy. Frisbee and whatever mission trip you go on in January. Like, I think
– and if you're really lucky, you're at a church that, like, does dinners. Like, so families will host college students. So maybe you get to go to somebody's house with somebody of the opposite gender. There's, like, 4 or 5 of you, and a couple of them are girls. Then that also counts. You lump that into your dating life.
Sure. You're sharing a ride here and there. Maybe you can call that whatever. But I feel like – okay, so let's talk about the dating aspect of reform, guys. We've already kind of gotten into it. But I feel like if you're a reformed guy – you never have a girlfriend. And what I mean by that is you do all this hanging around and then you announce your engagement. You know what I mean? But you never introduce anyone as your girlfriend. Have you seen this, Piper? Or am I off base on this?
Yeah, well, culturally, I think that's very true. I think there's usually a phase where you are very clearly dating, very clearly boyfriend and girlfriend, but for some reason it's not in the vernacular. It's like that's a trite unwholesome thing.
Like, so calling someone a girlfriend and calling it dating, those are two things that are beneath you, because if you're a white reformed college dude, you're super smug, right? And I say that with a large degree of, you know, sympathy and affection in my heart, because
I say it with lots of memories. Like, I was so smug.
Absolutely. And being smug is a part of the intoxicating kind of cocktail of being a reformed college dude.
Yes.
Like, if you can't be smug, you're losing out on like 80% of the fun of being.
Yeah, there is no point in being a reformed college dude if you're not going to take advantage of being smug. If you can't be profoundly smug and just a jackass about the whole thing.
Yes, absolutely. So what are some other things you're being smug about besides dating if you're a reformed white college dude?
Well, I mean, theology is the main thing. It's sure. You move into the dorm and, you know, night number 3, you're sitting around on somebody's like nasty stank couch and get into as conversations do, they go straight to the 5 points of Calvinism because why wouldn't they? And somebody's like, well, I grew up Assemblies of God, and like you almost dismiss them as a human before they can say anything else. But then, okay, so you suppress that impulse, and then you get
You have that pang of like, I can't believe I chose a college where somebody who's Assemblies of God would also choose. You know what I mean? And then you're like, did I pick the wrong school?
Even though you've never actually met anybody from that denomination, because your youth group. Your youth group didn't do the citywide things, you know. Right. Your youth group didn't like go on co-missions trips. If you ever ran across them, it was like your youth group was wearing your teal t-shirts and they were wearing their bright yellow t-shirts in Honduras some summer.
Yeah.
And so you saw
all of
them.
Which t-shirts were hideous.
Yeah, by the way. Were all ugly. Yeah. Designed.
They're all indefensible t-shirts.
Yes. So you suppress the impulse to just dismiss them as a human being, and then you get into whether it's gifts of the Holy Spirit or the 5 points of Calvinism, whatever it is, and you basically just listen to them for a minute, and then you're just like, well, I mean, you clearly don't read your Bible,
yeah,
and like that is the MO and arguments. It's like, well, I mean, if you read your Bible, you would very clearly see that like Romans 9 means this. Mm-hmm. It's so obvious, and that is. Reformed white college dude argument in a nutshell. Until they've had a chance to read a few books, and then they can mix in, well, like J.I. Packer says this or R.C. Sproul says this, and then you've got like a child with a weapon in their hands at that point, because it's like a weaponized Calvinist. It's a dangerous thing.
Dude, weaponized Calvinist is a phase. I mean, that's right in the same wheelhouse as the like hating C.S. Lewis phase. And it's bad, man. Like it's real bad. It's not a pretty thing at all. So what is your kind of aesthetic life like if you're a white reformed college dude? What are you wearing? What's your t-shirt life? What's your like music listening life? My sense is that you're dabbling in a little, like 5 years ago, Lecrae would have been the reference. I don't know who it would be now, but like you're sort of doing the, like, I'm good with rap thing in certain contexts. Like I'm okay with black people, you know, so you're dabbling in a little bit of that aesthetically. What else?
Yeah, I think in the broader white reformed world, it's still, you know, Lecrae, it's the Reach Records crowd. Yeah. If you're a little bit more adventurous, you have found a few others. But honestly, like, those are the only like rubber stamped reformed approved hip hop artists.
Yeah.
Besides some others who nobody's ever heard of because they're just not very good.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you've got that.
Like Owen Strachan, right? Didn't he make a hip hop record?
Boy, if he did, I imagine he's tried to scrub that thing from the internet.
I feel like I never tire of talking about this. I bring it up once a year. It's my annual, you know, slide into talking about Owen Strachan's rap record.
That's an amazing thing. So, yeah, you've got that. You've got like, what else would you have? Because the college world is weird because they're not like if you're like a theology major, you know, so you're really going in on this, you usually get to one or two conferences a year, you know.
Yeah.
You go to Passion and you're like, man, I loved what John Piper had to say. I can't believe they let Beth Moore on stage. Like, that was a woman preaching. That's horrendous. Uh-huh. Even though this isn't a local church, and she's a more gifted preacher than most dudes. so you know, you've got that aspect. So, you know, you kind of have your conference affiliations. It's almost like, you know, you've got like Bama football fans and Georgia football fans. You've got like John Piper fans and Tim Keller fans and Matty Chan and whoever else.
Yeah.
But then like just the aesthetic of the person, this is the one place where white college reform dudes can vary, because you can be very preppy, you can be very slobby, you can be very grungy, you can be kind of whatever on the spectrum, so long as you can engage in dating awkwardness, ultimate frisbee, and inane theological arguments.
Absolutely. See, I feel like we don't get, like, there's different genres of cool college kids, and I love the college kids at our church, but I don't feel like we're not getting like the ones that the world would rubber stamp as cool. Like the kind of gleaming mega churches in town are getting the sort of 1980s cool, you know, college kid. The Anglican church is getting the sort of current, actually cool versions of college kids. You know what I mean? Like that thing is really popping. And I think, I don't know a whole lot about it, but I think it's a lot of it has to do, you know, there's a certain aesthetic there that's just absolutely missing in reformed churches.
Well, yeah, if you grow up in like happy clappy 7-Eleven song, Jesus is my girlfriend church culture, where it's a lot of glitz and glam, then the first time you're exposed to liturgy, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like being raised in a vegetarian home and then somebody's like, no, really, try the New York strip medium rare, and you're like, oh my goodness, that's all I'm gonna eat every meal now.
Absolutely. Dude, another thing about that. So every once in a while when I go to the hipster coffee shops here, there's like a hot priest from the Anglican church, like meeting with people. And like, he's got the clerical collar and everything. And it just feels very, it's like a thing out of a movie.
When you say hot, do you mean like he's a hot looking person or hot as in like popular?
Yeah. Like hot looking, like he's a good looking priest.
I mean, probably both, but okay.
Yeah. We're looking at a good looking priest meeting with you in a coffee shop. Like, that's a good scenario, and that's a scenario that the Reformed Church is not delivering, you know?
Yeah, a lot of dumpy dudes in tweed and khaki and stuff in the Reformed Church.
And I feel like in the Reformed Church, by and large, you're meeting in the office, not the coffee shop. You know what I'm saying?
However, a quintessential white Reformed college dude thing is the early morning or late at night accountability group, which often happens at a coffee shop.
Dude, now how can an accountability group happen in a coffee shop where you're talking about like looking at porn and stuff? I mean, is that a thing? Is that a thing you talk about in the coffee shop?
Well, I mean, nobody's ever accused college dudes of being self-aware, so they probably don't realize that the people at the table 18 inches away can hear them.
That's true.
So, well, we know this because they talk loudly about everything else, and so you can hear them arguing about sports or breaking up with their girlfriend or whatever, which is occasionally entertaining and most of the time annoying. But yeah, so it's, I mean, I like in my college career, I went through seasons of like the 6 a.m. coffee before class.
Yeah.
Partly because that's like self-flagellation for a college student. Like right now, if I was to meet somebody at 6 a.m., like that's no big deal. I get up super early anyway because I'm an old man. But in college, that's like Martin Luther beating himself with whips or whatever. That's what 6 a.m. is. So
absolutely.
Yes. And so you trudge your way to Caribou Coffee or Starbucks or whatever local hipster coffee shop it is. And you all go around the circle and admit to looking at porn. And you all feel very shamefaced and nobody has anything helpful to say. And then you're like, well, let's try to not do that this week. All right. See you at 6 a.m. again next week.
Yeah.
Or there's something magical about that happening at 10 p.m. to do the same thing. What's that?
Yeah. 6 a.m. is more magical, though. It's more self-flagellating. So I think it, like, and we've talked about this before, in the strange economy of, like, reformed guys creating law, like, I think the earlier the men's meeting happens, the better, because it's more miserable. So, like, you could even push it back to 5 a.m. You know, you could go 4 a.m. and it would be even more, like, you know, works in that area. But,
The other aspect of it is you cull out the guys who aren't serious. So you're like, this is only for people who really want to hate themselves about the things they did wrong.
Exactly.
Like, if you really want to loathe your existence for a couple hours, this is your opportunity.
But hey, grace.
Yeah, you know. That's right. There's enough grace to cover both your lack of sleep and all the things you did wrong.
Oh, exactly, man. It's so funny, dude. It's so true. So, Pipe, I want to transition us kind of in a completely different direction, and I want to do it by admitting to something. So this is, in a way, like the 4 a.m. coffee. but what I'm admitting to is that minutes before we came onto the air to tape this program, I gave probably one of the worst lectures of my life, and it devolved into – I don't know how we got there, but it devolved into me showing a clip of the Rocky IV training montage.
So what you're saying is that the end justifies the means.
The end justifies the means in a way, although I'm not sure. I'm not sure how it landed, and I'm not sure how this generation, like, appreciates the Rocky IV training montage. Probably not very well, but it got me thinking about something. And what I'm thinking about is bad movies that we love. Since last week we did the inverse of that. We did, like, amazing movies that sucked.
Right.
These are crappy movies that we love. And for me, the king of that genre is Rocky IV. Rocky IV is quantifiably a trash movie. it's 89 minutes long, 64 minutes of which is a montage of some kind, right? So Rocky IV, it montages the first three Rocky movies. It montages parts of itself. The script must have looked like a pamphlet. It must have been like 3 pages of actual dialogue. So Rocky IV is a trashy movie in which Rocky flies to Moscow to fight Ivan Drago, and also to end the Cold War, and also to avenge his friend Apollo Creed's death. But I tell you, in spite of myself, in spite of fully being an adult and knowing that it's a crappy movie, I love Rocky IV and I enjoy watching it. So. Pipe, what are some movies like that for you?
Well, we've talked at length on a previous episode. I mean, it's probably been a few months now, but just all things Nicolas Cage.
Yes.
And
oh,
Cage,
absolutely. Very
Cage
watchable.
He has made a career out of enjoyable, horrific movies.
Yeah.
You know, The Rock. And
dude, The Rock is so bad, but
it's
good.
It's just the dumbest, and it's so entertaining. So is Gone in 60 Seconds. Just a filth movie. Like, it's not filth morally, but, like, filth artistically. It's so bad.
And it's
just fun. It's just – so Nicolas Cage is a category of these movies.
Dude, can we talk about that for a minute? Because I agree. Nicolas Cage is a genre definer in terms of this category. But my question to you, Pipe, vis-a-vis The Rock, is as follows. If you are Sean Connery and you've got kind of an impressive resume of movies and you're considered, like, a better than average actor, why do you do The Rock? Like, why are you doing that? Because and my sub question to that is, were these good actors at some point laboring under the misconception that that Nicolas Cage had an upside as an actor? I want you to speak to that.
I feel like there's been like statistical data. Nicolas Cage has drawn the spotlight. Let's put it that way. In how in the world does this guy keep making big budget movies? Or at least he did from like 1993 to like 2007 or 2008. I don't think since then it's like, well, now you're going to do Left Behind.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think people hadn't quite caught on to the fact that he was a parody of something.
Yeah.
And I think Connery had reached the point where kind of like, and we've talked about this before too, with like Pacino and other kind of older actors who are just like, I give up. You know, the exceptions, the exceptions are like Dustin Hoffman and who else? I mean, there's Tom Hanks. There's not a ton who are getting older and still making great movies.
Dude, you know who's become a self-parody? And KK and I realized this the other night as we were watching Murder on the Orient Express. I don't know if you've seen the picture. Have you seen it?
Yep.
Yeah. Johnny Depp is an absolute parody of Johnny Depp. He's just a guy doing Johnny Depp.
Yeah, Johnny Depp did Jack Sparrow.
Yeah.
He has never done another character since.
That was the end of his life. Yep. That was the end of his career as an actor.
I think he deserves credit because he finally discovered himself. He's like, I am a parody of Keith Richards playing a pirate. So therefore, I'm going to just do that in every
movie. Dude, it's a niche of a niche of a niche persona-wise. In that, he's not unlike a college kid.
Right.
Except that he was doing his like persona work in front of the whole world.
And,
you know,
and making so much money for it. So good for
so
him.
So much money.
I will endorse anybody who can do a Keith Richards playing a pirate and make tens of millions of dollars off of it. Like, that person deserves a high five.
Those are crappy movies. Do you enjoy them?
I really enjoyed the first one. The other ones were so bad, they were not enjoyable.
Yeah, they were really, really bad. I agree.
Let's see. Here's another sort of genre of pretty bad movies that are really fun. Anything Guy Ritchie does.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Guy Ritchie's movies are, you know, they have their own aesthetic.
So Snatch, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. These are Guy Ritchie.
Yeah,
pictures,
he did the Sherlock Holmes ones with Robert Downey Jr. He did what was his most recent one? The King Arthur movie, which was again just a certifiably bad movie that I really enjoyed watching.
Dude, remember when we thought those Sherlock Holmes movies were good until the series Sherlock came out, which was like 150 times better?
Yeah. Well, here's just as a general rule for movies, if you try to take something that's a period, you know, it's set in a historic period and modernize it.
Yeah.
So you're like, we're going to do modern music. We're going to make it feel very modern. We're not going to do it appropriate to its time. It's going to be bad. It just never works.
Yeah.
Which is why the series Sherlock did work, because you're like, oh, he's going to use technology and be a whiz on the internet and, you know.
Right.
Oh, good. Now we have a modern Sherlock. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, Guy Ritchie just categorically is bad movie, really enjoyable.
Now, do we give – I want to talk about mulligans in this area, and then I'll lay another movie or two on you. But I want to go back to Nick Cage, and then I want to hit a Guy Ritchie thing.
All right.
Do you think that Nick Cage got a mulligan in terms of – like, do you think he got more life on his acting reputation? Because he did that one, like, unfunny comedy that, like, hipster film people like. What's the name of it? Raising Arizona. It allegedly a comedy but not funny. And it gave him some hipster credibility. Do you think that impacted like his persona?
I think it did. I think at least amongst a certain crowd of people. See, here's my thing with Nicolas Cage. I feel like he is he's like an athlete with like maybe like a submarine pitcher or something.
Yeah.
He can do one thing. He throws like one pitch from one angle and it can get one kind of hitter out.
He's Dan Quisenberry.
Right. And so except not even that good. He's like Byung-Hun Kim, you know, the guy who was really good for like a season and a half and then got rocked and was out of the league. And
he's Raleigh Fingers. He has the mustache.
Which means if the manager or director puts him in a position to succeed, which is a very tiny position, he can do well. Like
you got to come in like the middle of the seventh inning against a lefty.
Right.
And you'll do well.
And just,
but
just
only
one,
then.
Just one hitter, maybe two if they're both lefties. And then from there, beyond that, he just gets rocked. He can't lead a movie. So like Raising Arizona, I didn't enjoy. But like Matchstick Men, which is this weird little offbeat heist film where he was like he played a really neurotic guy who had like anxiety and whatever else. That actually worked because I don't think he was acting. I think he actually thought he was robbing banks. And so he's that guy.
Yeah.
The problem is when they're like, here, go put on a mullet and take down criminals in an airplane. you know?
Oh, dude, Con Air.
Con Air. Con Air is one of the best bad movies.
Such a sweaty, greasy movie. You want to bathe Nick
yeah,
Cage.
Con yeah, Air. You want to go take a shower afterwards. Like his right. his Southern accent is the worst thing.
Oh, unbelievable. Like, yeah.
I'm trying to think if I can remember a worse accent. I mean,
coming out of a guy's mouth.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, like Dick Van Dyke's Cockney accent in Mary Poppins was infinitely better than Nicolas Cage's Southern accent in Con Air. I mean, it was so bad that it was entertaining.
So I'm glad you mentioned Cockney accents. I think Guy Ritchie gets a mulligan because of the fact that he's British. Don't you think? Like, he's basically making crappy movies that are fun, but people feel as though they're artistic because he's Guy Ritchie and he's British and he was married to Madonna for a minute.
Well, the other thing that he did, I think that's true. I think Americans, if somebody has a British accent, we assume they're smarter and probably
they're like,
more
oh,
creative.
It's British, it's upscale. Yeah. It's like, no, it isn't. This is Con Air with British accents, basically. Right. Yeah.
The other thing is he did the thing where he made a couple lower and mid budget movies, so Snatch and Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yeah.
And those were his best movies. In just about every way.
Snatch is actually a cool movie.
Right.
I do like.
They're cool. Yeah. There's some cool characters. They're funny. Like the plot line is twisty enough to you get to the end and you're like, whoa, that was fun. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
And then Hollywood was like, oh, but here's $180 million to make a movie. And he's somebody who needs the limitation of like $35 million to do something well. And when he gets the big money, you know, he turns into like Michael Bay with a Cockney accent.
Dude, that's so true. That's so true. Piper, I'm going to lay another one on you. This is a bad movie. This is a trash movie that I love. And it may be just like one iteration of sports movies too old for you, but I want to know if you've seen it. It's The Program. Have you seen The Program?
No, I haven't. Here's the thing. Most trash sports movies I genuinely don't like.
Yeah.
Because I'm an actual like I really like sports, and so when they're portrayed badly, it doesn't offend me. I'm just like, it's boring or it's lame.
So The Program came out my senior year of high school, and I was a football player, obviously, and like when that movie came out, it was such a sensation that all of us began doing some of the things that the characters in the movie were doing, and it had the movie had every sports movie stereotype imaginable. It had steroid stuff. It had alcohol abuse stuff. It had the distant, unpleasable father stuff. It had unethical coach stuff. So it's as though the screenwriter said, I'm going to take every sports movie trope and cliche and throw it into a like a Cuisinart and press like go and out vomited The Program. And yet I know in my heart of hearts it's a terrible movie, but I still can probably quote it from start to finish, and I watch it almost every fall.
Yeah, and that's where like I think cliches can actually make really enjoyable movies.
Yeah,
like action. There was two or three of them, and I'm forgetting the name, but they were made maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and it was all of the '80s action stars.
Oh, dude, the Expendables.
Expendables. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Like, again, but here's the thing. That was a self-consciously terrible movie. Like they went into it
you're
and
right,
like,
that was
you know,
tongue in cheek.
Like we are going to own all the cliches. We're going to bring in all the cliche actors. We're going to have Jean-Claude Van Damme do the splits. Like every single thing that you loved about 80s action films, we're just going to drop in snapshots and we're going to blow stuff up.
Absolutely.
And they were so fun.
They were fun. Dude, we saw those in the theater. Zach Bartles and myself, and we took our wives for some reason, which was a really probably bad idea.
No, that's a total bro movie. It's a dude movie.
It's a dude movie. It's a bro movie. But we sat like our wives insisted on sitting next to each other, which was a good move for them. But Zach and I were like bookending our wives, and we spent the whole movie like leaning across our wives, making clever comments to one another. And
totally enhancing their viewing experience, I'm sure.
Totally enhancing their viewing experience in such a way as to invite them to, like, you know, notice how clever we were. And I think it failed. I think it failed on all levels. But, Pipe, what's another movie in this genre for you, bad movies that you love?
Oh, let's see here. trying to think. Well, let me exclude a category that are bad that are not enjoyable. Okay. Anything Michael Bay has his hands on.
Like, okay, so give me some Michael Bay titles. I know.
The ones that come to mind most recently are all the Transformers movies.
Oh, dude, yeah, garbage.
Like, just bad.
Very expensive garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are certain genres of movies that have to be good to be good. Like, you can't make a bad, good war movie. A war movie has to be good, good, or it's just garbage. Like,
dude, I'm so glad you said that. That's incredibly insightful, but you're right. Like, it has to be good, good.
Because, yep. And I think that's because there's a level of sort of seriousness about it. Like, you can make a good, bad action flick about fictional people, but not if it's a World War II movie or a Vietnam movie. Or, like, you can't do a good, bad movie about actual people losing their actual lives. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
Let's see. So let me think of other.
Dude, you know it's a lovable trash movie while you're thinking.
What's that?
Top Gun. Top Gun stinks. Oh, Top Gun is garbage.
I kind of feel that way around most 80s movies, though.
Yeah, yeah. Top Gun, dude. Here's the thing about Top Gun. There's no real bad guy in the movie. Because you're supposed to feel as though Iceman is the bad guy, but Iceman is actually just a really good pilot who follows the rules and isn't a douche like Tom Cruise.
Right.
Yet you're supposed to root for Tom Cruise. It makes no sense.
It was like a quintessential cop movie, but dropped in the Air Force or the Navy or whatever they were. Because the rogue cop. Like that's a genre of movie. The guy who, you know, the lone wolf rogue cop who goes off
and he's a lone wolf, he's creative, nobody understands him.
Right. And the bad guys are his superiors who are like, no, really, you should follow the rules and not shoot off your gun 47 times in the middle of a street. You know,
dude, in Top Gun, the bad guys were just people who did their jobs really well.
Right. And that's then it. Yeah, and then the Russians who you never actually saw.
Right.
Like they were sort of the threat, but they weren't really real.
Dude, I miss Russians being bad guys in movies. That was a great thing of a bygone era.
And I guess that won't happen under our current administration, but maybe again in a few years, you know, we can make them bad guys again. Although the thing is, you can't make any ethnic or racial bad guys anymore.
Unless you're doing a historical movie, that's the only way you can get away with it.
But you have to do it very precisely then so that it's like, these are not Germans. These are Nazis from 1944.
Nazis, it's 1944. It's very explicit. Or you can make an action movie in which the bad guy just – in modern action movies, the bad guy just has to be a standard like white American dirtbag.
Right.
You know, he can't be any other kind of dirtbag. He has to be a white American dirtbag.
Well, it can be like organized crime. You know, or that kind of thing. But it has to be sort of situationally explained because what you cannot do is associate any sort of guilt with any sort of nationality, which people used to do all the time, especially with the Russians during a period of time. But you can't do that anymore.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You cannot. I have one more bad movie that I think love is too strong of a word, but this is another sports movie. Oliver Stone's Any Given Sunday.
Yes.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Dude, it's such a turd. It's such an absolute piece of trash.
Yeah.
Which is like a grown-up version of the program in that it's every like pro football is bad cliche thrown into a blender and then Cuisinarted up and vomited all over the screen with no editing whatsoever. You know, it's just – like 3.5 hours of whatever was on Oliver Stone's mind at the moment.
Yeah.
But
which I think is every Oliver Stone movie, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. But the funny and like prophetic thing about that movie is that a lot of the issues that it plumbed a little bit ahead of its time have come to pass. It's, you know, there are things in that movie that turned out to be true, even though the movie itself was a ripoff of a really good book, which is maybe, my way of segueing into our last segment, Pipe, what are we reading? We should go short on this because I've like to get off and do some work. But
listeners are either really enjoying this or they'll quit 15 minutes ago.
Dude, that's okay. God bless them. So what are we reading, Pipe?
All right. I'm in the middle of a handful of books right now. That the one that I'm getting close to finishing is called What's Wrong with the World. It's a collection of G.K. Chesterton essays, which I – I made the commitment to myself this year that I was going to read more Chesterton because I'd only read a little bit prior. Love how he writes. Love how he thinks. I'm basically just jealous of the man's brain. He's brilliant. And he's a hilarious writer. I didn't realize when I picked this up, though, that like the first half of it was about women's suffrage, which is not a topic, especially because it's very dated and very British, that I care about. But he's such an interesting writer and thinker that it made me cruise right through the women's suffrage essays because I'm fascinated by how he arrives at his conclusions.
Nice, man. That's excellent. So I'm going to promo the book that Any Given Sunday was stolen from, and it's a book called You're Okay, It's Just a Bruise by a former Oakland Raiders team doctor named Robert Huizenga. Fascinating, well-written, really honest look at kind of medical issues in the NFL sort of in the 80s and 90s. So a great little sports book. And with that, Piper, we are done. We have wandered to and fro throughout this episode. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
If you're hearing this right now, you're probably like, who the heck is this? And why are they playing during my favorite podcast? And I get it. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I do want to introduce myself. My name is Trevor Tyson, and I'm the host of Trevor Talks, where we talk to real people about real topics and real stories. I just want to invite you, if you love podcasts, if you love music, if you love books and love hearing from the people who create it, come check us out at Trevor Talks. Simply go to Google or Life Audio, type in Trevor Talks, and it'll pop on up. Hope you have a great day.